Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Trying to lose weight? It's time to try Hers. At forhers.com/foryou, you can access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss treatments tailored just for you. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
In the early 1990s, the Sherman family moved into a country homestead that spread across 512 acres of northern Utah in a region known as the Uinta Basin. But shortly after moving in, horrifying things started to happen. When Terry and his wife Gwen bought the ranch, it had sat abandoned for many years, and because of that, they bought it well below market value. Upon viewing the home, they noticed that every window and door had multiple deadbolts on them inside and out, and there was a large stake in the front yard with a bunch of chains around it. But they were too excited about the ranch in general to even think twice about this. But shortly after settling in one night, Terry saw a huge animal that appeared to be a wolf creeping towards their livestock. It grabbed a calf in its jaws, and Terry ended up shooting it multiple times. The animal didn't seem hurt, but slowly walked back into the bushes. When Terry went to go check it out, he noticed a foul odor, like rotting flesh. Over the next 18 months, the Sherman family would be tormented by something on the ranch. They, along with many friends and family they would have over, would see beast-like creatures lurking in the woods on the property. Few of the family's dogs would be incinerated in the middle of the night. Their cows would disappear and then turn up mutilated, but in an oddly surgical manner, and they would also be drained of blood. Family claimed to see UFOs and strange lights, and they also claimed to see circular doorways appear on the property out of thin air. They finally got so scared that in 1996, after talking to the media, they sold the ranch to Robert Bigelow. Robert was a millionaire in the Las Vegas real estate and was also a UFO enthusiast. So when he heard about the strange occurrences at the ranch and the fact that the Uinta Basin of eastern Utah is a hotspot for UFO sightings, he bought the property. Robert created the National Institute for Discovery Science, and under that, he built an observation building on the property. He moved in several scientists and vets to conduct 24/7 surveillance and research. On March 12, 1997, while conducting research in the middle of the night, a biochemist claimed to have seen a large humanoid creature looking at the research team from a tree. It had yellow eyes. The team fired at it and it disappeared, but it left behind a single oval track about 6 inches in diameter with two sharp claw prints. Many people on the crew witnessed paranormal activity and strange lights on the ranch. The ranch was then sold to Brandon Fugel, and he named it the Skinwalker Ranch. The Skinwalker Ranch is the most scientifically studied paranormal hotspot in the world. It has a long history of creepy, unexplained activity. What do you guys think?
Skinwalker story time. I have a friend who is an indigenous woman. She told me this story. When she was 10 years old, her parents moved her and her little brother away from the reservation. But her grandparents stayed. When her little brother was 8 years old, he went to spend the weekend with his grandmother on the reservation. Days after his grandpa had passed away. So he helped his grandma clean the garage, the house, go through his grandpa's belongings, and then they ate supper and they went to bed. About 1:30, he woke up feeling like somebody was staring at him. He sat up in the bed and he seen his grandmother standing at the bedroom door, except she looked different. He said her eyes were black and her smile was touching both ears. This thing took a couple of steps towards him and growled at him. He said, "Grandma, you're scaring me." When all of a sudden he felt his grandmother sit up beside him and ask him what was wrong. He said, "I thought you were standing at the door." She said, "No, I've been asleep beside you all night." So he told her what he had just seen at the door. She said, "You must have had a bad dream." She reached over into her nightstand. She grabbed his grandpa's pocket watch and a couple of bags of herbs. He said they smelled like lavender and sage. She said, "Keep this on you at all times. Go back to sleep." Next morning, he woke up. She was gone. He searched the entire house, couldn't find her nowhere, so he called his parents. When his parents got there, he told them what had happened the night before. When they got home, the parents said, "If y'all see Grandma, you need to come tell us. Do not talk to her. Don't let her in the house. And don't let her touch you." So my friend goes to bed, and later on that night, she wakes up and sees her grandmother at the window smiling at her. She runs to the window. She said this was the first time in that house that she could not pry that window open. So she ran to her mom and said, "Grandma's outside. We have to help her. Let her in." Her mother said, "Absolutely not. Go get your brother and come back." Her dad jumps up and starts burning different herbs and drawing these different symbols on the windows and doors. She gets her brother and comes back to the living room. Her dad said, "We can't leave at night. We have to wait until the sun comes up." She said the whole family stayed in the living room that night. But the living room was surrounded by windows, smiling at her, slowly waving at her, begging her to please let her in. She said, "You don't know what fear is until you see someone you love taken over or possessed by a demon." She said the thing, imitating her grandmother, would come up to each window and drag its nails down and just bob its head back and forth and make these loud screeching sounds and reveal every tooth it had. And then sometimes she would just turn her head really fast towards the window and make eye contact. She said she kept knocking 3 times on the doors and windows. Her and her brother sat in her mom's lap and cried all night. At sunrise, she watched her grandmother float away for the last time. She said, "I wouldn't want anyone to have to remember their grandmother that way." The next day, they moved over 300 miles away. I asked her why they didn't file a missing person report. She said the police would not believe them.
So the first rule about skinwalkers, you're not supposed to talk about them. Skinwalkers, Yanagloshis, aka Yannies, that's what we call them. Alrighty, so a long time ago, if you want to know scary stories, you ask the elders, because they have truthful, very scary ones, ones you'll never get over. So me and my cousins, that's what we thought would be a great night. Let's have some fun. Let's talk about them. Let's ask Uncle. So we asked Uncle, right? We're all in a hogan, up the canyon by ourselves at my grandma's house, in a hogan. So he starts telling us these stories about them and talking about how he was home by himself in the hogan. The hogan had not had the pipe for the stove put in yet. And he remembers hearing something jump up on the hogan and running around. And he was thinking to himself how scared he was. And he looked up and he's seen 2 eyes peering down at him. Okay, you don't talk about him. So as he's telling us this, before the story could even end, we hear the res dogs barking in the corner. And they start slowly coming up to the hogan. Now we're all quiet. We're just listening to these dogs. And then the dogs stop right underneath the hogan window. And they just stay there. And they're just barking. And we're like, "Go open it. You go open it." No, nobody would open it. My uncle's like, "Shut up." And he said a prayer. And then boom, all the dogs took off running so fast into the woods. When I say that... that's the scariest night of my life. I ain't kidding. I've had a lot of scary nights. But anyway, we call them skinwalkers because they dress up in you know, dead animal skin. And they run faster than Usain Bolt. And if you want to correct me in the comments and tell me, "Nah, that's not how it is. This is how they are." Go ahead. But I say to you, how do you know so much about them? My great-grandpa, who's a medicine man, he said, when you know that you are around one, you say, "Pa, pa." That's why you let them know that they are one and they can't bother you. Anyway, it's just an evil entity. It exists on the reservation. It's there. And to think that there is not evil here on Earth, you're crazy. There is so much evil on this Earth, and it's around us. And I think that it doesn't matter what kind of stories we tell, what kind of stories we have. When you talk about it, you're inviting that evilness to be in and around you. So that's why when I say, when they tell you don't whistle at night, you're calling them. You're telling them to come. So don't whistle at night. So anyway, that's my, look, I'm all scared.
So I'm not going to say what it was, but I'm not going to say what it ain't. So I used to work for this company that I would be on call a lot. You know, we'd get calls at 2, 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning. You know, if something broke, we'd have to go out there and fix it. So I gotten a call probably about 3 o'clock in the morning, and it was for some down power poles. And I had drove all the way out there. I got there about 4 o'clock in the morning. I was up there in the boonies, right? I was up there in the sticks. So I get going up there, and there is no lights whatsoever on this little road that I was on. I mean, no houses, street lights, nothing. So I finally pull up to the house that I was getting at, and it was pitch black. And I parked the truck, I got out, and I started doing what I was doing, and I heard a help. And I kind of froze because I was like, what? Like, that sounded like a person. And all I had was a little headlamp at the time, so I couldn't see nothing for probably 10, 15 feet in front of me. So I went back to the truck and got a flashlight, and I started shining it around. And about 300 feet up this driveway, it was a little gravel driveway, 300 feet up this driveway, I seen a house. It was a little old house, but a tree fell right on it. And I was like, there's no way. And I started looking around, and like I kind of turned my head away from the house, and I heard, help, again. So I was thinking, okay, there is a lady in this house. Tree done fell on it. Like, she needs my help, okay? Like, I'm going. So if you know anything about me, is I will help anybody. If you cold, I'll give you my hoodie. If you got flashers on the side of the road, I'll pull over and ask what you need, because 9 times out of 10, I could probably help you in some way. Now, I carry everything from tools to toolies in here, you know, so I can help 9 times out of 10. So I start booking it up this driveway, because I'm thinking time is of the essence. I am running up this driveway, and I got my flashlight, and it's pointed on it, and I'm running, running, running. All of a sudden, I heard, hey! And I stopped on a dime, dead in my tracks.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply, in-app only.
Because that hay sounded a little bit closer than what that house was, and it just started to click with me. There ain't no lady in that house. So I stopped dead in my tracks, and I never turned my back towards the danger. I started backpedaling. I used to play cornerback back in high school. I started backpedaling down that whole driveway. It still makes the back of my neck stand, or the hairs on the back of my neck stand up whenever I talk about it. It was a whole nother thing, but like I got down at the bottom of the driveway and finished my job, and I got out of Dodge. I didn't hear nothing the rest of the night, but I still got out of there. And still to this day, it freaks me out. But I don't know what it was, but I know what it ain't. It wasn't a person, you know?
I saw a skinwalker. I was 9 years old, and I was laying on the floor with my childhood dog. We were in the dining room, and I had the lights off because it was nighttime outside, and if you lay on the floor and stretch out, you can look out the sliding door and see the stars. I just wanted to hang out and stargaze with my dog. Everything's calm and quiet. My brother's all the way down the hallway playing video games, and my parents are in the living room. If my mom's not there to cause a scene, then the other side will take care of it. They're watching TV two rooms over, but I hear footsteps. I immediately turn over, and now I'm facing the hallway because I want to see who's coming. I'm assuming it's my brother. That's when a shadow figure appeared at the entrance to the hallway. The shadow figure is just standing there and it's not moving, and it looks like it's about the height of a grown man until it hears me speak. When I say who's there, all of a sudden it shrinks down on itself onto its hands and knees, about the size of a little boy. And the little boy turns and looks at me. I can't make out its face or its clothes. So I just go, oh, it's you, thinking this is my brother messing with me. For about 3 seconds, me and this shadow figure, this shadow boy, are staring at each other. The whole time, it doesn't say anything. I'm thinking, why is my brother not saying anything? And as the seconds pass, I start to realize that's not my fucking brother. The moment that clicks, I jumped up, left my poor dog, and sprint to the living room. Of course, my parents don't believe me. They think I'm just seeing shit. I stayed in the living room for an hour until I finally had the courage to run and turn on the hall light. The hall light being on gives me courage to step into the dining room and turn that light on. I'm standing in the exact spot that the shadow figure was as it crouched down, and obviously the figure's gone, and my dog's laying there like nothing happened. Then I go down the hall and I knock on my brother's door and I make my way in. I ask him, hey, were you just in the dining room an hour ago? And he denies it. No, I wasn't. Get out of my room. At first, I didn't believe him because we are prone to pull pranks on each other. But then I realized he's sitting under two layers of blankets. He's in the middle of a Fable campaign and his other free hand is in a bag of chips. He hasn't left this spot in hours. And that's the end of the story. I never saw the shadow figure again. To this day, I can't believe that when I jumped up to run out that I didn't turn the light switch on. I ran past the light switch. I could have flicked it on to see if the shadow figure would have disappeared before my eyes or if it wasn't there at all. But I didn't. Little me ran for the hills. And I think the reason it shrunk down to a child's form was to trick me into thinking it was another child. You know, when we're kids, our third eyes are open more. You know, they close as you get bigger. Unless you're a medium, then it stays open. I think that explains why I was the only one that saw it and why I haven't seen another one since.
The teachings about demons and the evil one and how they are able to operate among us as the five-fingered being. The evil one is the actual person or being that is in charge of all of the other evil beings, and those are the demons. And the evil one actually has his origin as known as the Black Yei or Yei Xin, and his primary goal is to be an obstacle, to be in opposition or the adversary to the things that are good, that are made good by the holy people and given to us. And he does everything in his power to make sure that he has some way perverted their effort. And the demons are the ones that help him, and they are not physical in any way being, but they do have influence over so many of the things that are around us in a physical setting. And they can do things that are of the supernatural nature and actually have an effect on us as the five-fingered being. And the demons actually have about four different names that we apply to them as the way that they have power. And the witchcraft is one of them. And Atakash is another one. Ante is another one. There's a fourth one that I don't like to give a name to, and that is more of a physical type of an attack on the human body. If you are weak in a spiritual way or an emotional way or in a mental way, when those are combined, they can attack you. And it is that what they can inflict upon you is actually physical illnesses, and that can deteriorate your body to where it's almost nothing. And so those are the type of powers that they actually have. But in modern times, and that the influence and that the evil ones have, they take any type of form. They come in all size and shapes, either as physical five-fingered beings or even material type of things to distract us. And that is the main thing, is the adversary is always making the effort to distract us from the things that are right and good. And so it is that we have, in our own traditional teaching, what we have is the skinwalker. Skinwalkers are actually, they are actual beings or people, the five-fingered being that have great knowledge of the dark side. And they are able to do the flatline and to actually be between here and the next world and in spirit form and able to do things to get around and do the evil that they can do. And that is very evil in so many ways. And so those are the ones that we call Yinan Doshi. And I don't like to talk about it, and the Neh don't like to talk about it. It is that they have control over so many things in the world today. The demonic influence on that is available, or we have. And it is always for distraction. And one of the main things that they attack in our present world and among our Diné is the family. The families are also always under some type of influence by the evil one and demonic forces. And so we have their efforts to make our families not stable, not united. And it is that they have that influence. And so it destroys the family.
Good morning, it's 5 a.m. Let me tell you a very scary story about how I was stalked by what I think was a skinwalker. This isn't a funny story. This isn't anything like the Sharon Tate story. This is something I've never publicly talked about, and to this day, I just still can't explain. So, where I used to live when I was a little boy was an area of Temecula known as Deleuze. It's this like hilly mountainous area that sort of overlooks the Temecula Basin. And Deleuze is surrounded by oak and avocado groves. So it's dark and there's like all these like kind of gullies and canyons and stuff like that. And my brother and I would explore them on our bikes. But even before then, I have lived in Deleuze twice in my life. Once when I was a little boy from like the ages of like 0 to 5, to we moved and then I was there from like ages 10 to 12. Anyway, so the first time in Deleuze, something that just I've never been able to explain, and this all kind of factors into the same thing. When I was a little boy, in the first house that we lived in, we lived on acreage. Like, we had a couple acres in deep in these groves. I called it the big house because it was just a big white house. And so I would always hear voices in the trees. And I was like a very precocious young child, and so I would talk to them. But they were talking to me in a language that I never understood. I never could figure it out. And when we started to explore the property more, as my brother and I grew up, we found arrowheads. There was a little creek that ran next to the house, and we found arrowheads and like artifacts. And so like there was also this like giant stone in the backyard, like deep, deep, deep. And it had these like holes, like where someone would take like a stone and like grind like corn. But I could never get over the fact that whenever I would be by myself in the backyard, I always felt like I was being watched. And so one night when I was a little boy, I asked my dad in the middle of the night to walk down to the kitchen with me and get a glass of water. And we had this really big plate window in the kitchen, and staring back at me were these giant orange eyes. And I have never been able to like describe the fear and the dread of seeing these unblinking giant orange eyes. It was probably an animal, honestly, but you can't rationalize that when you're like 4 or 5 years old. Even now, whenever I have nightmares, I genuinely see those orange eyes. So that's sort of the first part of this story. Just setting up of like, Deleuze has a very ancient, weird energy that I can't explain. Second time that we moved to Deleuze was the time that I am still just terrified to even talk about publicly. Let me grind this coffee 1 second. So after my father passes away, my mom and my brother move back to Temecula. We find another house in the Deleuze area because it's just where we know. And it's a pretty cool property. I have neighbors now, like kids my age and that I can hang out with. I really like this place that we live. And so one day, my brother and I are riding around on our bikes and we find this area kind of near our house where there were supposed to be some other houses built. And in this grove of oaks overlooking a canyon, there is a treehouse. And we freak out. We have always wanted a treehouse of our own. And it's very clear that this has been abandoned. Like years and years ago, the wood is kind of rotten. The everything is sort of like dilapidated. And the thing with that is there's a lot of rust. And so like you can already smell this like very like tangy, rusty smell in the air. And so we then say, this is our treehouse. No one's clearly using it, so let's make it ours. And we go back to the house and we start getting tools. We start working on this. And whenever we have neighbor friends over, we go work on the treehouse. It was basically like mom would take us to Home Depot. We'd get a couple 2x4s, some nails, and start hammering it in. And So about a month later, my brother Chase and my mom go on a field trip to Sacramento because that was the big trip at the time. And so I'm staying with some neighbor friends and their son, Taylor. And I get on my bike one day after school and I'm like, hey, I'm going to go ride my bike. And they're like, oh, where are you going to go? And I said, oh, the treehouse. And the mom is like, what treehouse? So I'm like, oh, you know, the one that's like up Sunset Terrace. And she's like, honey, don't go there. I was like, why? And she's like, don't go there, please. I'm like, okay, this is weird. So I went there because I'm dumb. And when I get there, there's a kid. There's a kid just working on the treehouse. And I've never seen him before. And so I'm like, hey, hello. And he like waves back. And so I come up and I'm like, hi, I'm Hunter. What's your name? And he says, I'm working on the treehouse. I'm like, yeah, I see that. That's cool. Is this yours? And he's like, no, I like it though. I'm like, okay. So he's given like fairly short one word answers. And the thing that I'm noticing now is that rusty smell from before is heightened. It is a lot more intense. Like, it is like this rust. It's like blood and rust. It's a very metallic smell. And I'm starting to get pretty queasy, like really off-putted. And it's getting to the point where I'm almost about to throw up. And this kid is just like, he's working on the treehouse, but it's almost as if like he's acting out working on the treehouse. Like, he's not actually doing anything. And so I'm trying to get like asking more questions, like where he lives. And he's only really giving one word answers if he gives answers at all. And I'm just starting to feel weird and my stomach feels sick from the smell. And I'm like, hey, I'm actually gonna go. He's like, I know, you're gonna go now. I'm like, okay. And so I'm like, well, I'll see you later. Still don't have his name. And I get on my bike and I ride away and I like look back and he's then standing in the field, like standing where these houses were supposed to be built. Later that night, I can't sleep. Like, I can't sleep at all. And I feel this like need to like look out the window. And there's this kid standing at the top of the driveway. I'm like genuinely like all the hair is like standing on my hand. He's like standing in the driveway and it's clearly this kid, but it's as if this kid is like crooked. It's literally like he's looking like this. He's just standing there. And I like blink. And like I close the blinds and I can feel like when you feel someone's presence like coming up to a window, you know they're there. And I could not sleep that entire night because I felt that presence at that window. And like right before in the morning, it was a Friday, and so I just had to check for myself. And I went outside before we left for school and I looked. And there were like these weird misshapen, like it looked like a footprint, but it was almost as if it was like made by an animal. It was just standing in front of that window. I can't explain it. This is what happened. Believe me if you want. I think I was stalked by a skinwalker. All right, bye.
What if an SW tried to break into your house? What would you do? Well, that's what tonight's True Scary Story is about, so buckle up. We're gonna jump right into it. So tonight's submitter's name is Lizzie, and Lizzie said that she's always been able to, like, hear and see stuff, but this was, like, nothing she has ever experienced in her entire life. It's also very important to note that Lizzie is a witch. Now, one day, Lizzie was walking in the park with her pit bull. There was a row of thick trees and foliage, which they were walking right next to. But suddenly, she hears rustling in the trees, so she looks, and she is absolutely stunned by what she sees. Standing next to her was a 10-foot tall creature with a body of both a deer and a bear. It seemed strong, but she could see its bones through its skin, and it was on its hind legs. Its face consisted of only a deer skull, and then she hears this blood-curdling scream come from it. She stumbles back in shock because she has no idea what to do at this point. She is absolutely terrified, so she sprints home with her dog. As soon as she gets home, she immediately checks to see if her home protection spells and her warding spells are still intact. She also made a few more. She believes that this is what stopped this thing from getting inside of her house. Fast forward later that night and she's on her couch watching cartoons with her dog. It's around 3 a.m. So they're just on the couch chilling when suddenly her dog gets up and he looks scared. And then he runs to the kennel and just starts cowering in the kennel. She then starts hearing something on her window. It's tapping. Tap, tap, tap. Tap, tap, tap. Just kept going. She had no idea what to do. She was terrified, but she decides that she's going to go look over to the window. So she goes over and she looks through the window, and outside of her house is the thing that she saw at the park tapping on her window. She's racking her brain and she's trying to think about what she learned. Like, what spells can she do to make this thing not come inside of her house? And two come to mind. The only problem is one of them, she needs the actual hair from whatever this is. And she can't do that. But the other one, she only needed a candle and warding herbs. She grabs a candle, white sage, lavender, etc. And then she sits across the room. She starts the spell. It went something like this. With the powers of the sun, moon, trees, and earth, please protect my home and banish all creatures with ill intentions. She then burned a protective rune on a piece of paper before grabbing her dog and running up to her room as fast as she possibly could. She laid in bed for what felt like forever, just hearing that tap, tap, tap. Tap, tap, tap. Somehow this girl falls asleep. I have no idea how she did, but she did. But she was actually happy that she was hearing the tapping sound because it was coming from downstairs. And that meant that the more she heard the tap from downstairs, the more she knew that this thing had not moved. It had not gotten into her house and it did not move to like her bedroom window or, God forbid, the second floor. The next day she wakes up, the knocking had stopped. So she goes outside, but she finds that many of her wards had been broken. She could not take any chances. So she packed up her and her dog and she went across state to her mom's house. She thankfully has not experienced anything else yet, and she wants to know what we think that this was. So what do you guys think it was? I personally don't know that much about the SWs, but what I have heard about them, this kind of sounds like one, but it could possibly be like a or something else. I'm not sure. My TikTok friends will be able to tell you. But the fact that she saw it in the park and it followed her home, like, and it waited until 3 a.m., meaning like maybe it already knew where she lived, is what scares me the most. It sounds like this thing already knew where she lived and was maybe stalking her. What do you guys think? I'm glad that you were able to do these protection spells. I don't know what it means, the fact that the wards were broken. I don't know if that's like a bad thing or a good thing or a sign that maybe like it worked or maybe a sign that maybe those specific wards didn't work. But you guys can maybe tell me that also in the comments because I'm not sure. But nonetheless, SWs and anything that have to do with like any of those creatures freak me the hell out. Drop all thoughts, opinions, and comments below. That is her real name and she will be in the comments. But with that being said, hugs.
I'm pretty sure I encountered an actual skinwalker. So this happened a few years ago when I visited my cousin in Pennsylvania for the weekend. Keep in mind, y'all, Pennsylvania is full of wooded areas. So this story happened at night and it all started because she had to take out the trash. So because it was nighttime, I of course volunteered to help her because she lived in a townhouse. So if you know anything about that, you know that the dumpsters, they're not in front of your house. You have to like walk a little bit to then throw out the trash. So it was in its own designated area and that of course being right near the woods. So anyways, this night in particular was very foggy, which made it very hard to see. And y'all, I remember when we were walking to the dumpster, it was quiet, but it was an uneasy quiet. You know, like usually you would hear bugs, insects, but this time, nothing. Mm-mm. So we're at the dumpster and I remember getting this weird feeling and I told my cousin, I was like, can you please hurry up? Because at this point, I want to go back to the house. I'm over being out here. And y'all, of course, after I said that, that's when we both see this small black cat appear out of nowhere. And one thing about my cousin is she loves cats, so I guess she probably thought this was her sign with the cat distribution system, so she decided to follow it. And y'all, that little thing went into the woods! So I obviously, one, wasn't gonna leave her alone, and two, wasn't gonna walk back alone. So I decided to follow her. So we had our flashlights on our phones following the cat, and I remember at one point, the cat like ran between these two trees. And what's really crazy is that when we looked over to see if the cat was there, it wasn't. And y'all, where we were standing, there's absolutely no way we couldn't have not seen where the cat went. So the fact that we couldn't see where the cat went freaked us both out. On top of that, this cat led us so far into the woods that we ended up losing connection on our phone, so we couldn't call anybody. So we're standing in the middle of nowhere. It's foggy, it's night, and the only light that we have are our flashlights. At this point, I'm aggravated. So we proceeded to trace our steps in hopes of not going further into the woods. And y'all, when I tell y'all, this is when it got so, so crazy. So I remember we're walking and I hear something call my name, but it was faint. And I asked my cousin, I was like, yo, did you just hear that? She goes, no, it's probably your mind playing tricks on you. Oh, okay. Okay. Then about 5 minutes later, we both now hear the voice of someone calling my name, which sounded like my cousin's mom. How in the world did her mom walk out into the woods? There's absolutely no way, right? So that's when my cousin yells, Mom? big mistake because we instantly start hearing the bushes around us start moving as if this thing is coming closer to us. So at this point, I'm freaking out and I tell my cousin that we need to run because that is just not your mom. That's when we hear the voice say, "Come over here." That's when I decided that it's time to book it. And when I tell y'all, we ran like we had never ran before. Like, I consider joining track after this. Now, y'all, as we're running, we start to hear stomping and loud crunches from the leaves that are on the ground as it's getting closer to us. I still remember that as we were running, I turned my head for 1 second and y'all, whatever was chasing us wasn't human and wasn't a damn animal. Maybe my mind was playing tricks on me, but y'all, it was massive. And when I saw this thing, I started screaming like there was no tomorrow. So we finally make it back to the dumpster and we turn around and it just isn't there. Nothing. So what's crazy is that the next day we go out into the woods when it's sunny out to see if there were footprints or something, like a trace of something left behind, but there was nothing. But I swear to you, whatever it was just not human. It wasn't from this earth. And I still wonder to this day, what would have happened if we did not run?
Guys, don't go to Skinwalker Ranch. It was the worst mistake of my life. That place is so much worse than they say it is. It's not a tourist attraction. I'm just gonna tell you what happened. I happened to be in Arizona last month and I had a layover flight in Utah for like a full day before I got to come back home. And one of my best friends happened to be in Utah doing interviews for his residency. So we happened to be in the state at the same time and we thought, I mean, like, when's the next time we're going to be here? What's a fun thing we could do here? We didn't really know what to do. And we're like, oh, you know, it'd be a fun bit if we went to go check out Skinwalker Ranch. It would be funny, it would be cool. And we weren't really there to look at Skinwalker Ranch. I didn't think anything of Skinwalker Ranch. I've seen that History Channel show. It looks like a bunch of quacks. It looks silly. We went there for fun because we know there's military bases there and we were poking around. Oh, maybe we'll see a B-2 stealth bomber fly overhead or like some F-22s. We know that there's like Hill Air Force Base over there. We were there to have fun, maybe see some military stuff. We really weren't there so much for Skinwalker Ranch. We just wanted to pull up, take a picture, then maybe go somewhere else. Just enjoy Utah for what it was. But when we pulled up there, you know, initially the place doesn't look like anything. It's mundane, it's dull, everything's the same color. They don't really tell you how to get to Skinwalker Ranch on the map, but realistically, there's so many like private property trespassing signs. They basically have a breadcrumb trail that's like leading you to the front gate. Like we knew we were close when we started seeing all of these signs that eventually led to this front gate. So we pull our car over about like maybe like an eighth of a mile past the front gate, throw on the hazards, and we just are walking the line of the front gate, like the line of the gate to the front gate. The only weird thing that we saw, which in hindsight was a bit weird, was there was like posts outside of the gates that were like wrapped in animal skins and like looked like animal intestines, but they were just like dried out by the sun. They seemed man-made. They seemed like they were there to make the lore feel like actually spooky, but for us, we're just like, that's just kind of gross. Whatever, we walk past them and we get to the front gate, and the front gate has like an iconic kind of look to it. And we're like, all right, let's just grab a pic so we can say like, look, we're at Skinwalker Ranch together, and then we're gonna drive somewhere else and maybe go on a hike or like look for some B-2 stealth bombers in the sky. Whatever, boys stuff. We're like, all right, let's take this pic. And I put my water bottle on the floor and I put my phone up, and then I do that little timer thing on your phone. I don't know why I put it for like 10 seconds, just because I feel like I needed time to backpedal and get into a good pose with my friend. But this is where it gets really weird. Like, so I put on that 10 second timer, I backpedal. You know, we're a little bit worried that maybe somebody's gonna come out and scold us, but we weren't really thinking about cars driving by. But as I hit this timer, I'm backpedaling, there's a car coming from the left to the right. We're like, all right, let's just hope it drives by. Let's just get this pic. Let's get out of here. We're not really trying to ruffle any feathers. We know people work here. Like, we're being annoying tourists, but we're not trying. We'll leave, you know? Right as this car pulls up, this timer's like at like 7 seconds, 6 seconds, and a black Chevy Tahoe pulls up to like right in front of my phone. Of course, as we're taking a picture here, big ass black car filled with men in suits. And immediately they're just like, you're trespassing, you can't be here. You could tell that they deal with this all the time. And me and my friend, we just have this timer. We're like, let's just wait a second. Let's let this 3 seconds count down. Let's get this picture. And I give them the most like, hold on, just give us 1 second. Clearly we're taking a picture. This is where everything gets weird. And I can't explain it. And I'm trying to deal with it. And I'm trying to rationalize it to myself and make sense of it. Once the flash went off, like the timer went off, for my phone and for the picture, it felt like we entered a soundproof room. Like all of the wind and the sounds of like crackling leaves and just like the sounds of nature and like desert and ranch, it felt like we just entered a soundproof room, like somebody plucked the sound away from us. I don't know if any of you guys have experienced this. Sometimes like some heightened level of cortisol, maybe this happens where it kind of feels like you get super hyper aware and like your eyes almost like crank up a little bit, like the saturation cranked up a little bit and the vibrance, it just everything seemed like it got a little bit more color and a little bit sharper. And it really freaked me out that I couldn't hear and all my vision seemed to be tweaked a little bit. I didn't know if I was the only one feeling it. I didn't know if I was having an anxiety attack or a panic attack. And I look at my friend Sam and I could see that he's in shock too. Like he's feeling it too. And then he's looking at the other guys. And then I look at the dudes that had just pulled up and they're feeling it too. They're looking at us like, what is happening right now? What is going on? So before it was like a shoo, get off our property thing, like you annoying tourists. And now we're sitting in a situation where we're looking at these guys and they're looking at us like, are you feeling this the same way we're feeling this? And then I see their eyes shoot over to the gate and Sam nudges me and I turn. Everything is still just so heightened and so weird. And I look inside of this gate onto the ridge and there's this like glowing blue orb. That's the only way I could explain it. There's just this glowing blue orb and it doesn't have any imperfections. And it's just, you can't tell what part is the front and the back. And it's just floating about eye level inside of the gate. It had no indications of what was the front of the back, but I could almost tell by its like slight movements that it was like looking at the other guys. And then it like almost mechanical. And then I could tell it was looking at us. And I'm just looking at this thing floating. There was about the size of a beach ball, but everything in me, it was like it pulled fear from my heart. Every part of my being was scared. I didn't know what I was looking at. It looked so unnatural and so foreign from anything I've ever seen. It moved like nothing. And then it just kind of rattled and just shot up into the sky. If you blinked, you wouldn't have seen it shoot up. It just like a projectile, but it wasn't like a projectile. It wasn't like a rocket. It almost zipped. Like, you know, the difference between like a muscle car or like a sports car and then like a Tesla that just zips and makes no sound. It just shot up into the sky. It zipped. And then it just kind of made an arching pattern and just kind of disappeared. It was one of those experiences that, to be honest, I would never have said anything about it. Me and Sam probably have been like, that was weird. Blue orb, Skinwalker Ranch, that was sick. Let's go home, whatever. But it was the fact that these other guys were with us that made this an issue, because we look back at them, I'm kind of freaking out. I'm like, if it was just me and Sam, we're just getting in the car, we're leaving. These guys are celebrating. They're celebrating like that was the best thing that ever happened to them. They were just acting like serious, get off our property, dead serious businessmen or whatever they are. And now they're like jumping around and cheering and celebrating. And we don't know how to react to this. These are grown men acting like that situation was amazing. I just wait until they start to engage with us. And just one of the dudes is like, he comes up to us with the weirdest energy, just saying things like, that was amazing, wasn't it? That was awesome. We knew activity happened when newcomers came, but we've never seen anything like that. They never let us come that close. And he's like talking to us as if that experience that we just had was some type of blessing. And then he starts like pressing us like, you saw it too, like please, like come in, like give us testimony. And he's like trying to get us to come with him to give him testimony about what just happened. And I'm just weirded out by this guy in general. Sam came to a different conclusion than I did, because Sam replied before I did. He just basically said, and I wasn't expecting him to come from this angle whatsoever, Sam goes, I want to keep our country's secrets. Whatever you need us to sign, whatever we need to do for us to go home, I want our country's secrets to stay safe. Tell us what we need to do. He thinks that these dudes are military. And I'm like, that actually kind of makes sense. And what we just saw might have been military grade equipment that we were not supposed to see, but we saw it. And these dudes are playing buddy-buddy, trying to get us to come with them because they're gonna, who knows? But Sam is basically offering, like, we didn't see anything. Whatever you need us to sign to keep our country's secrets a secret, we're willing to do so as long as we could leave. But this dude is just, he is just keeps making it seem like he is pumped. He's absolutely reassuring us that he's just a scientist. His team is all scientists. They're just on this ranch to do research. And it gets to the point where he's so eccentric and he's so just excited about it and reassuring that he's not military and what we saw has nothing to do with the military, that we kind of calm down. Even though what we just saw was so bizarre and a story you probably wouldn't tell anybody without looking like an absolute weirdo, this guy convinced us that what we saw was pretty cool in the moment, and he was doing research on the ranch, and that this would be really important for us to come and just give our eyewitness testimony for what they were doing. Then he started offering us things like, just come on, I'll give you a tour of the ranch. You guys could like pop around yourselves. We'll give you a golf cart. He was so overly friendly that in that moment, when you kind of feel like you're half in trouble, while you just experienced something that was so bizarre that like, you just don't know what to think or believe. You're kind of in a malleable state. Like people could influence you. And he had been here. He told us that he lived there and like he was always studying there. And then that was the most amazing thing he'd seen. And he just wanted us to come on to give a testimony. We could have a tour and we could leave. Everything in me wishes I didn't get into that Tahoe and go onto that ranch. Once I closed that door, he seemed so friendly, but it just got weird. Once we were in the car, he was just going over what happened in such a theatrical way, as if he was like rehearsing the story that just happened to us right then, as if he was rehearsing it to tell other people. And he was like kind of exaggerating it already. And he just seemed a little bit off. And I wish we had gotten out of the car before that gate closed, because once that gate closed, he just looked back. I'll never forget this. This dude just said something along the lines of, if I were you guys, I would never leave. And this man meant it, because he actively tried to not let us leave. So I make the mistake of getting into the Tahoe with this guy. I'm in the back of this guy's car. It's just me and Sam. The gate closed behind us. We are stuck on this ranch, pretty much in this guy's custody. He wasn't making it seem that way. He was being eccentric and exciting and talking about what just happened to us as if it was some biblical level event that we should be happy. We should feel blessed that it happened to us. He's just talking about this place like it is just some sacred grounds. And he's just giving us the weirdest vibes. But he's like, hey, the place that we're going to, all you guys have to do is give us a quick testimony. It's up on the right up here. We're just driving down straight down this road from the gate, and we see a building coming up to our right. So we're like, okay, we're pulling up. When we pull up, it's a pretty nice building. So I'm like, okay, things are feeling a little bit better. Even though this guy's a little bit weird, his friends aren't really talking. We pull up to this building, and through the windows, I'm like, okay, there's other people in there. There seems to be like a couple dozen people in there working. We pop out of the car. He walks us into the front door. This is a legitimate lab. This isn't just a building. This isn't just like a bunch of guys here doing nothing. Everybody's in lab coats. They kind of have their own sections where they seem like they're doing some type of experiments and testing. The scientists are completely ignoring us. And I know like scientists aren't in customer service. So I'm not holding it against them, but it was a bit odd that nobody at this place was speaking to us, even though we're complete newcomers, strangers. You would think that people don't visit there often. They might be curious of why we're there, but these people are heads down, completely ignoring us, looking through their microscopes, doing scans, doing like twisty things, just doing science, it seemed. The guy that brought us in that seemed as if he ran the show there, like it seemed like he was the boss. He's just kind of showing us around. Everybody's completely ignoring us until we meet this one other guy. He brings us to this other room, and as impressive as the lab was, the second room was significantly more impressive. The second room was like a surveillance room, and there was an entire wall. There had to be like 10 monitors on this wall with 30 different camera angles of the entire ranch. They were keeping tabs on this entire ranch. There was not a piece of this ranch that didn't have a camera angle pointed towards it. That's how thorough this was. So we're standing in the surveillance room. This is pretty legit. And the second guy he introduces us to is the only other really friendly guy that we met there. Everybody else was just quiet, kind of dull, completely ignoring us. The other two guys that were with us just kind of faded into the lab work. So now we're just with this guy who seems like the boss, and this guy that introduces himself as Tim. Tim is just really eccentric and really nice, but he just starts talking to the dude that brought us. Me and Sam are just sitting there just so awkward watching these two grown men interact in a very bizarre way. He starts debriefing this dude about what just happened to us. And again, he's just so over the top. He's just telling this dude in this crazy way. And this dude is just eating it up. And I'm sitting there watching these grown men talk about it. And I realize what's happening, because they're kind of piling onto what happened with each other. Like, he says one thing, and the guy's like, yeah, it was probably this. And then he says another thing, and he's like, oh, that correlates to this thing that happened last week. And they're almost working each other up. And at that point, I kind of see what this is. They're talking about this place like it is a sacred ground. They are fully bought into what is going on here. And it's starting to feel a bit cultish. They are talking about absolutely out there ideas based on what just happened to us, and they're correlating things that aren't super connected. It just seems like they're really reaching. And we're looking at these dudes like, these dudes are a bit odd. But they're really friendly. We kind of break into the conversation because we were standing there for 3 minutes as they're just blabbermouthing each other. The dude introduces us to Tim, and we're like, okay, hey, Tim, nice to meet you. Can we get this testimony out of the way so we can poke around? We only have a few hours here before we have to leave.
But then the dude that brought us in is like, actually, I have a meeting right now in the room that you would have to do the testimony in. So you're gonna have to do the testimony a bit later, but don't worry, Tim here will give you a tour of the ranch. And right there, me and Sam are like, we didn't come in here for this dude to give us a tour. You're kind of twisting it up on us. We thought we were gonna be able to do a testimony and poke around ourselves, but now it seems as if we're gonna have a chaperone. But we're in so deep at this point, we're just kind of pressured by the situation. And we're like, okay, I guess we're going with Tim. The dude that brought us in just immediately beelines to the testimony room, I guess, and he leaves. So now we're just stuck with weird Tim. And Tim calls to Junior in the other room. And me and Sam are like, okay, so now we're going, now not only are we not going by ourselves, we're going with this dude that we don't know who has already shown us that he's a little bit odd. And he is calling Junior into the room, who happened to be a 10-year-old kid and I guess is his son. And we're like, okay, I guess this is a Disney ride. This bizarre thing happens. We're on this ranch and now we're just in this weird situation attached to this father-son duo that brings us to this golf cart. And it's, we're like, okay, I guess we're doing this tour. And this dude, Tim, is so much more of a quack than the dude we were with before. Something legitimate happened to us, but this dude is talking about events from like the 1960s that are just so weird. And he's talking about it as if it is like a rehearsed story from the Bible, talking about like large bulletproof wolves and poltergeists and just these very almost like folklore childish tales. And he's talking about it as if it like changed his life and his perspective. And then he starts going into about how this ranch is a meeting of time and space, and every question that you possibly had will be answered if you stay on this ranch. Like at this point, once we're on this golf cart and we're going into this ranch with this guy, we're like, no, this is a cult. We just walked into a place that has a weird religious feeling tie to what this ranch is. Even though they feel cultish, we don't immediately feel in danger because we're just like, they're just kind of weird and they just kind of seem like they worship this ranch. We're like, we'll get out of it. It's probably like a 30-40 minute tour, whatever, then we'll get out of here. Tim was picking up on the fact that me and Sam were giving each other kind of like skeptical looks, like this dude is so weird. And his son is so nonchalant, by the way. This kid is the chillest kid ever. I talked to him, I'm like, bro, oh, like this is your first tour on the ranch, like thinking that he's just at work with his dad. And this kid goes, I know every inch of this ranch. I was born here, like I was raised here. And this kid is just acting so chill, but like he's one of those kids that is like he feels like an adult in a kid's body. Like he is kind of has dry humor and he's very monotone. He just gives straight answers, but he's like 10 and you're just like, what are you, a 40-year-old in the 10-year-old's body? But I could tell Tim is picking up on our slight sarcasm and reluctance to believe the really flamboyant tales that he's telling us about this ranch. We're driving past what seems to be just kind of like another set of buildings. He's like, oh yeah? He like switched his tune. He's like, oh, you don't believe me? I'm gonna take you to the second homestead. This place is as haunted as it gets. And he starts telling us about like some poltergeist situation that used to happen at these homesteads. And he just whips the car over, parks it. He's like, let's go. I look at Junior and he's just like, whatever. He doesn't seem excited about this. So we're like, okay, I guess we're just gonna go with Tim. He's gonna show us this super excited, scary homestead. But at that point, we're like, well, this is kind of what we were here for. So as much as this dude seems like a quack, we're kind of happy to be checking this place out. But we're walking up and Tim's just going on and on. But I see Junior kind of like looks, he's like looking into the homestead and I see him kind of do like a little kid wave and like a giggle as if like he sees something he recognizes. So I'm expecting there to be more workers or something inside of this building. But once we get in, there's nobody in there. It is just like a living room, a kitchen, and then like a bedroom. And like in the living room, you're just like looking in, there's an archway to the kitchen and then an archway to the bedroom. And you can't really see if they connect. You can't really see if there's a back door. We just walk in and right away, when I like look at the door as we're walking in, this door is covered with 10 different styles of locks, padlocks, the little chain locks, all these different types of locks on the outside of this door. Once we're in, I just take a couple steps in and I look at the inside of the door, and the inside of the door is covered with locks. So right away, I'm like, oh, I don't like this one bit. Why is this Tim dude bringing us to this place that's locked on both sides? And I just saw little Junior just kind of like wave at somebody, but I didn't see anybody. So we walk in, I only walk like two steps in. One step back, I could put my foot into this door. I'm not letting anybody close this thing behind me. And we walk in, I'm not feeling good about it. I know Sam's not feeling good about it. He's tactical minded. He's immediately walking to that place looking for the exits. And I see a surveillance camera in the corner of this room. And I want to let this dude know that I'm seeing what is happening here. So I just draw attention to it. So I'm like, so what's that camera about? And he's just like, oh yeah, we're trying to get footage of the poltergeist activity in here. And he's being really eccentric and flamboyant. Like, guys, come in, like, come further in. We're like, I'm not having any of this. I'm not stepping 1 foot further into this house. There's no way somebody's gonna swing around the outside and close us in here and we're stuck here. There's no chance. So we're just standing by this door. I see Junior still kind of like, as if he's like looking behind his dad or like looking into the other rooms, just kind of like giggling and interacting with something that's not there. And Tim walks into the doorway of the kitchen. And then I see Junior start to laugh really hard, like really giggle, and run towards his dad and around his dad into the kitchen and then to the left. And like I said, there's the kitchen doorway and then there's the bedroom doorway. But I don't know if they're connected. So I'm expecting to see Junior run through the kitchen and then be able to see him in the bedroom doorway. But I don't see him run all the way through. Tim tries to grab him. He's like, come on, Junior. Like, no. Like, he's trying to, like, wrangle his son. Junior slips by him. Tim has to follow him through the kitchen. And then I'm expecting to see him pop out into the bedroom. But no, neither of them pop out into the bedroom. So I take a step back towards the doorway because I think they're trying to pop out the back of the house, swing around the house, and close us in. So I immediately take a step into the doorway so they can't do that. They think they're slick. It's not happening. Then it goes kind of silent for a second. We're like, what's going on? So I look at Sam. I'm like, go check. I'll stay by the door. So Sam kind of tactically duck walks and like peeks around. And as he's peeking around, Junior pops back out from where he came and into the living room laughing pretty hard. And then Sam looks in through the kitchen and then he backs up. Then he looks through the bedroom door and then he's like, he's not here. And I'm like, what do you mean he's not here? They're like, is there a back door there? And he's like, no, like that dude's not here. And there's not even a window big enough in the kitchen for him to disappear. And Junior's just in the living room laughing. And then Sam's looking at me. I'm looking outside of the door because I'm looking like, how did Tim get out of the house? I think he's going to try to push me from the back and close the door. This dude is nowhere to be found. And Sam is like, dude, he is not here. I don't know what's going on. And I just have this little kid laughing. And Sam is standing in the bedroom doorway now. I'm in the front doorway. And me and Sam are like, what do we do? Then Junior says something like, we tricked him. Just a little sprinkle of something, like revealing what just happened, but in like a little kid way, as if they were playing a joke. And Sam at this point is pretty much done with this situation. And he kind of barks at Junior. He's like, where'd your dad go? Because we're not about to get stuck in this place and padlocked by six locks. And the little kid points to the corner of the room. In between the two doorways, there's just an empty corner. And he points to the corner of the room and he says, we tricked him. And nothing's there. So we follow up with this kid. We're like, what do you mean? What do you mean you tricked him? Like, where is he? Where is your dad? And this kid is like, I don't know. He drops him somewhere else every time. And then he starts laughing. And Sam's getting genuinely annoyed at this point because why would this dude bring us out here and leave us with his kid? And now this kid is just playing little tricks on us or like doing this inside joke to himself. So he presses the kid one more time, but it's like the kid didn't even hear what he said. And this kid looks back at Sam and goes, he says you should get that mole checked on your neck.
So apparently these are not the only things that shapeshift. In Kalama, there's something very similar. There are also witches that practice dark magic and are able to shift into any type of animal. The part of Kalama that my grandmother grew up in was extremely known for having these things, to the point that they were always advised to never be out late. She had a bunch of older brothers that of course never listened. One night when one of her brothers is on his way home, he notices that this huge giant bird has been following him the whole way home. Mind you, he's riding a horse. This thing just keeps gawking at him and following him. He's taking all weird turns trying to get rid of this thing, but it continues to follow him. This is to kind of get an idea what it looked like, but it was huge. Then he remembers that there's this prayer that he was taught to pray if he ever ran across one of these things. The minute he prayed it, this thing completely drops to the ground. So he gets off his horse and goes to look at it. Apparently, they also don't like silver. He had this silver cross in his pocket. Go to part two. So he had this silver cross that he always kept in his pocket. When he got out to look at it, he took the cross and he just like put it in the ground like right in front of it. The minute the cross touched the ground, this thing was completely immobilized. Then this thing starts telling him to let her go, that she needed to be back before dawn in order to get back into her body. So he's of course not letting her go. He's pissed off. So he starts to take the feathers off of her head. She's of course screaming, saying that she needs to get back. She needs to get back. When he finally gets the feathers off of her, he lets her go. The next day he went to the market because he wanted to know who it was. He saw this woman covering her head because she was bald. So he goes up to her. He's like, oh, so it was you. I purposely took the feathers off your head because I wanted to know who it was. He told her, take this as a warning. The next time, you won't be coming back. So that's just one story out of like so many that my grandmother had.
The scary thing about skinwalkers is that they could be your family, your friends, anyone around you. Now, this is a story I heard from a guy named Jesse. Jesse had just moved to Nashville, Tennessee, and he was pursuing this musical career. He said he got an apartment in downtown, and things were actually going pretty well for him. And he actually got a gig as a guitar player in a pretty large band in the area. So he said, you know, he had just started dating this new girlfriend, and he was enjoying living in the big city when all of a sudden he gets a phone call from his father. Now, his father, he hadn't heard from in like 10 years. He had like went off on a bender and he had no idea where he went. So it was, you know, kind of weird to hear from his father. His father tells him, you know, I'm going to come to Tennessee and stay with you for a little bit if that's all right. Like, I need to get back on my feet. Is that okay? He was reluctant, but was like, okay, yeah, let's get you better and let's bring you here to Tennessee. So his father comes out and moves in with him. After about a week of living in this apartment, he decides to introduce his girlfriend to his father. The girlfriend, she comes over one night, and when she comes through the front door, she sees his father. Now, he said his father, you know, used to wear all of this Native American jewelry and like a talisman that he believed protected him from anything negative. Well, he said immediately as his girlfriend walked in the door, she got really fidgety and nervous, and she acted like she didn't want to be there or talk to his father. And after about 10 or 15 minutes, she's like, you know, I have to leave, I have to go. And she just walks out the door. So Jesse's kind of like, well, what's going on with her? Like, you know, what's up? And he said, you know, for the next couple weeks, right, she didn't want to come over to the house. She didn't want to see his father. She was acting really strange. So he said, you know, a few more months pass and things were going really good with his father. But then he started noticing that his father would go out late at night. He would be gone for the rest of the night. And in the morning, he would find his father in the living room, you know, completely naked. And he started to suspect that maybe his father was back on something. So, you know, he's stressed out about this, and he's stressed out about his like girlfriend acting strange. And he said, you know, it was just like really, really hard times. Well, he said one night he gets done with the gig and he actually was walking home. Now, at the time, Nashville had a pretty significant snowstorm, and there was no one out in the downtown area. And he said he just remembered walking down the streets, and it was eerily quiet. There was no one out. And he said that's when he seen in the alleyway next to a restaurant, there was a man standing there. And he said just something seemed off about this person, and he felt like something was about to go down. So he started to run, and he said as he took off running, this man started to chase him. And he said all of a sudden this man went from being a man to some sort of half man, half dog like creature. And he said it was just some ferocious type of creature. And this thing is running after him down the streets of Nashville. And he said he trips in the snow, he falls to the ground, and this thing comes over on top of him and starts smelling him. And he said all of a sudden it turned its head, and he said as he had him, you know, kind of pinned down on the ground, he looked over and he noticed, you know, there was a tattoo on this thing. And it was the exact same tattoo that his dad had on his wrist. And he said this thing just turned and it got up, and it took off running down into an alley. And he said at this point, he suspected that whatever this thing was, most likely was his father. And he was now terrified. So he goes back to his apartment. He calls up his girlfriend and he's like, hey, you know, I'm freaking out. Like, this is what just happened with my father. I know you don't believe me, but, you know, something is wrong. His girlfriend comes over and she starts talking to him. And she's like, you know, the reason I've been acting weird is because before you introduced me to your father, I was walking down the street and I seen your father eat a dog. And like, I didn't know how to tell you that. And I didn't know like what you would think or if you would believe me. And so like, I knew something was off about him. And once he heard this, he was like for certain that like his dad was whatever this creature was. So him and his girlfriend, they locked themselves in the bedroom. And about 1 a.m., he said, all of a sudden, he hears the front door open of his apartment. And he can hear footsteps coming down the hallway. And then, bam, 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 bam. He hears this banging sound on the door. And he hears, like, his father screaming, yelling at him to come out. Could get out of the bedroom. Get out of the bedroom right now. And he's like, no, no, I'm not coming out. And he's like, you don't understand. You don't understand. She's a skinwalker. You need to get out of there now. And he said that's when he turned and he looked behind him and he seen his girlfriend was no longer his girlfriend, but the same creature that he had seen on the streets. And so he ran out the door and he said his father did some kind of like ceremony and whatever this was took off out of the apartment and he never seen it again.
Why is it that we on the rest close our windows, close the blinds, close the curtains? We all been told about what lingers around at night outside, but why should you close your blinds and curtains as well? I was told that evil spirits and bad medicine can enter a home through a window. I have a story from when I was an infant living on the rest with my father's extended family, out on the Navajo rest. There was a medicine man that people in the neighborhood suspected of being a skinwalker, or a witch or something. Well, the medicine man ended up dying, and everyone held some type of service for him despite the rumors. Everyone that was there had came back to my grandma's place, which was only several miles from the descendant's former home. On that night, as everyone was getting ready for bed in the house, there was a horrible sound, a loud cry, coming from the direction of the past man's hogan. It was described as a mix between an animal and a human scream, loud enough to wake everyone in the house. My mother, being Christian, she got a bit nervous, but my father, who was traditional, he stood up and started closing all the windows, all the blinds, curtains, and covers in the room. I was told that he did this while not looking outside. All the other members of the family did the same. Nobody said anything, not a single word about it until the next morning, in which many family members said it was most likely the soul of the bad medicine man that was being sent to hell for his crimes in life. I was just a baby when this happened. This is what I was told. My dad said that when they all heard that horrible cry, everyone knew who it was. But nobody said anything. You see, looking outside, especially when you hear something strange, it means that you acknowledge or invite whatever it is closer to your home. That's why when they heard this cry, everyone jumped to action without even looking. And that's why when you go to sleep tonight, if you hear any strange noises, you didn't.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.